Okay? So virtually every probing question is going to be the who, what, when, where, how, and why. Key questions typically are what, how, and why. Okay? What are you looking for? How soon do you need it? And, you know, why are you moving or whatever? So go through with the group and brainstorm the specific questions that they will want to ask that will help to uncover their specific needs. Okay? Now, filling the dominant buying motive. Now, the dominant buying motive, that's the need. That's what we found. That's what they want. That's why they're looking. That's why they want to move to a new apartment. That's why they want to buy the new car. That's why they want the new dishwasher. Okay? That's what you've identified by going through the who, what, when, where, how, and why questions. In making the presentation, in filling the dominant buying motive, first rule here is to act enthusiastic and believe in your product, which we've already discussed. Okay? Now, I want to give you some quick little rules of things that you can do here that's going to help enhance people's belief in you and belief in your product and make them feel comfortable and everything with you as you are making the presentation. This will help you to act enthusiastically. Okay? Number one, smile. Number two, maintain a relaxed, open stance. Okay? In other words, if you're you know, relaxed, open stance like this, you know, people are going to feel more comfortable with you than if you're like that. Okay? Body language. Number three, lean slightly towards the customer. Pete? Number four, maintain eye contact. Boy, and that's so important. I remember a sales guy I was training one time, and he absolutely could not. I mean, he'd be making the presentation to you, Pete, and he'd be like this. Well, Pete, you know, this is really a great thing here, and you want to get into... Just drive you nuts. Number five, occasionally touch the client. Now, be careful. Be careful how you do this. Especially if you're selling bras at Juliet. You were the customer? Was she cute?
Yeah.
Oh, it works. See, it works. It works. Okay, know their name and use their name. But don't use it to excess. So a lot of times you can tell a real phony sales pitch. Well, Ben, this is really a great product, Ben. And Ben, I think you'd really like to have this, Ben. And okay, so don't use that to excess. Number seven, subtly mirror the customer's behavior. In other words, if the customer is all exuberant and ecstatic and enthusiastic, you want to be the same way. You don't want to come across as really laid back and low key. If, on the other hand, the customer is really kind of laid back and very low key, you don't want to come on real strong. Okay? So mirror their behavior. Mirror, you know, so that you're in tune and in touch with them. I got to tell you a story. This was the most incredible thing I'd ever seen. I was working with this one salesperson one time, and we were selling advertising. And I was going around with her on some sales calls, and she went into this one place. It was a Korean restaurant to sell advertising. And the lady who owned the restaurant spoke English, but it was, you know, kind of how Oriental. Well, the salesperson started mirroring this client to the point where this is how the salesperson was talking. Oh, yes, this very good advertising plan you like very much. You like to buy advertising, no?
Oh, no.
Because that's the way this lady was talking, you know. Well, that's it. The lady did not buy. Okay. And we got outside, and I says, man, did you have any idea what you were doing? And she says, no, what were you doing? And I told her. She says, oh, my, I had no idea. She had no idea that she was talking that way. Okay? I couldn't believe it. Oh, yeah, very good advertising plan. Oh, yeah, she was. But she was just so enthusiastic, see, and just she got so much into this whole deal, you know, that she just couldn't, break.
Was this prospect visibly offended or anything by that?
I don't know. I couldn't tell, you know. I know the lady didn't buy, but I couldn't tell. Really? Oh, it was amazing. Yeah. Oh, dear. Okay, number 8, use humor when appropriate. Okay, now, when you are presenting the product, now, this is really important. I'm going to teach you a little sales track. And this is a sales track that you will want to teach your clients because this works, okay? Now, what I mean by a sales track is they should do this the same way every single time, okay? And this, when you are presenting your product, when you are presenting whatever it is that you sell, you want to present it in this way. F-A-B-B-T-D. F-A-B-B-T-D. That is the sales track that I want you to use. It's a sales track I want you to teach to your clients. This is a very, sometimes, a difficult concept for many salespeople to master. But once they do, it's phenomenal, okay? It's phenomenal. What F-A-B-B-T-D is this, okay? Let's say that we are selling Lazy Boy recliners. Lazy Boy recliners. We are presenting the Lazy Boy recliner to the customer. We want to tell them about the Lazy Boy recliner. What is it we're going to tell them about the Lazy Boy recliner? We're going to tell them features or facts, okay? Features or facts, okay? For example, this Lazy Boy recliner has steel-reinforced springs. That's a feature. That's a fact about the product, okay? The tendency now for most salespeople, most unsuccessful salespeople, is to do this. They will say, Jeff, you need to buy this Lazy Boy recliner because, man, doggone it, it's got steel-reinforced springs. What do you think of that? Jeff saying, so what? What does that mean? Now, that's what most salespeople do. They will go to here and stop. Buy this Lazy Boy recliner. It's got steel-reinforced springs, and it comes in blue or red. Okay. What you want to do is go beyond that. Okay? Feature, advantage. Jeff, you know, this Lazy Boy recliner has steel-reinforced springs. That makes them 4 times stronger than any other spring on the market. I don't know if that's true or not. I just made that up, okay? But that's an advantage. You tell why is that particular feature or fact better than something else. Then you give them the... You know how Orientals, when their English is a second language, how they benefit of that. The benefit, think about the benefit in terms of this. W-I-I-F-M. What's in it for me? Okay? The only reason people buy stuff, the only reason people buy stuff is because they're hoping that their life is going to somehow be better off. Okay? In fact, there are two reasons that people buy things. Only two. Did you know that? Hope of gain. Hope that their life is going to be better off if they buy it. In other words, if I buy this chair, my life is going to be better off because I'll enjoy sitting in this chair and watching football every Sunday. Okay? That's one reason. Another reason that people buy stuff is fear of loss. Okay? Fear of loss. Now, this is a very, very important concept. Hope of gain or fear of loss. Two reasons that people buy stuff.
So that would be why I buy life insurance or car insurance.
In fact, 80% of the stuff we buy because of fear of loss. That's right. And it's a far more powerful motivator than hope of gain. Okay? Okay, what kind of car do you have?
Dodge Caravan.
Dodge Caravan. Okay, why did you buy the Dodge Caravan?
Number one, we wanted to space.
Okay.
But
you bought...
It's the highest rated safety.
Okay.
Highest rated safety
in its class. Okay. So you bought really, the whole thing was bought because of fear of loss. Okay. First of all, you were afraid that another vehicle may not be as safe, so you were afraid of, you know, somehow losing out, getting injured, getting killed in an accident or whatever if you did not have the most safe vehicle on the road, right? Okay? You probably also, when you said you bought because of space, you have a young, growing family, right? You were afraid if you did not buy the Caravan that you would run out of space if you didn't have it, see? That's why you bought. Sure, you could have bought a smaller car, but you were afraid you'd run out of space. See? We buy out of fear of loss more than anything. And it is the most powerful motivator. Okay? Why would I buy the Lazy Boy recliner that has steel-reinforced springs, four times stronger than any other spring on the market? Because this chair is not going to break down for 20 years. And I'm not going to have to worry about buying another one for a long time. See? Fear of loss. I'm afraid that if I don't buy this chair, I'm going to have to be buying another one pretty soon. And I don't want to do that. Cost more money. Big hassle. Okay? Remember that. Fear of loss is a far more powerful motivator. So anytime you can tie this benefit back to the fear of loss, the more powerful it's going to be. You know, Jeff, you really need to buy this Dodge Caravan. For two reasons. Number one, you have a young, growing family, and if you don't, you're going to outgrow it pretty soon. You're going to outgrow that other vehicle. The Dodge Caravan lasts you for a long time. Family grows up, you'll be just fine.
High-rated
safety. You're not going to have to worry about this thing being safe in an accident. It's safe. Safest vehicle in its class. The bridge. Whoops. I reversed these. Sorry. Feature advantage bridge benefit. Now, what the bridge is just this, okay? Lazy Boy recliner has steel reinforced springs. They're four times stronger than any other chair on the market. What that means to you is you're not ever going to have to worry about this chair breaking down. It's going to last 20 years. You're not going to have to go out and buy another one. Okay? So the bridge is what that means to you. Okay? And you always want to use that bridge because that's what ties it all together. What that means to you is, and then you state the benefit. Okay? And then you tie it down. Tie it down. Jeff, did you know that the Dodge Caravan has the highest rated safety features of any vehicle in its class? Meaning that it is probably the safest van that you can buy. What that means to you is you're not going to have to worry about your family getting injured if you ever have a collision. That's what you want, isn't it? See how that works? You're not, yeah, and that's called the head nod, see? And you want to do that. Head nod, okay? This Lazy Boy recliner has steel reinforced springs. They're 4 times stronger than any other spring on the market. Now, what that means to you is that this chair is going to last for a long, long time. You're not going to have to worry about buying another chair for at least the next 20 years. That's what you want, isn't it? The 21st century marketing system works at growing your business 3 ways. Now, the advantage of that is that we are going to grow your business by not only getting more prospects and improving closing ratio and improving customer worth, but that's going to give you exponential growth. Now, what that means to you is that your business is going to grow faster and you're going to make more money. That's what you want, isn't it? The 21st century marketing system leverages your hidden marketing assets. That means that we take what you are now doing and leverage it, optimize it, do a better job with what you're now doing, get more bang for the buck. What that means to you is you can get sustained growth without having to make a lot of major changes in your business or invest a lot of money. That's what you want, isn't it? See how this works?
Now, backing up into the bigger context, the psychology of selling, all this really gets into step 3. Is that right?
Yes, this is all step 3. Okay? You can see, I've built a rapport. I found out what you need. Now, I found out that I'm a car salesman. You're looking for a new vehicle. And I have found out that you've got 3 young children. 3 or 4?
3.
You have 3 young children. And they're all growing. And you're a pretty big guy yourself, so you're gonna need some space. Not only that, you're pretty concerned about safety because you drive up and down that canyon all the time, and it's scary, and you want to make sure that you're in a really darn safe vehicle. Okay, so I've assessed your needs. I found out what you want. Now, Jeff, what's going to work for you is the Dodge Caravan because it's the most safe vehicle of its class anywhere. Boom, 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 boom. That's what you want, isn't it?
No, that's interesting because I've probably visited 12 dealers, a dozen dealers.
Uh-huh.
And I've probably told everyone that I just had my van totaled, and there wasn't one of the salesmen who jumped on that.
Well, they're stupid. See, they're stupid. They're stupid, they're stupid, they're stupid. Or they have not been trained, which means there's a good opportunity for you, see, to go train them. Because, see, if they'd have known that, you told them that you were in an accident. And man, it was bad. It was scary. You were almost killed. Your wife was injured very severely. And man, you want a safe vehicle.
We were highly motivated.
Highly motivated for a safe vehicle. So you had to jump on that. Man, what you need is the Dodge Caravan because it meets all of your needs. Now see, you can cluster these together too. You can cluster these. You can cluster the features. See, you should buy the Dodge Caravan because not only is it the safest vehicle of its class, it also is going to provide the space that you need for your growing family. Has the 3 seats, has a lot of space inside. Everybody's going to be able to ride comfortably, even when they get to be real big. The advantage of that is that everybody's going to be comfortable. You're not going to have screaming kids that are fighting with each other because they're all jammed in the back seat of your little car. What that means to you is you're going to be happy and you're not going to have to replace this vehicle for a long time. It's going to last you the whole time that you and your family are around. And it's going to be safe. You're not going to have to worry ever about getting in an accident and being in an unsafe vehicle. That's what you want, isn't it? See that? So I clustered the 2 features together.
Now, I suppose the response to that might be yes. Or not really. I was kind of looking for And then you can kind of go and...
Yeah, now see, if he says, well, that's not what I want. Well, okay, then I screwed up back in... I missed it earlier.
But those give an opportunity to say, well, yeah, kind of, but I'd really like it in, you know, whatever.
Yeah. You're right. That's what I like, except I really want the blue one instead of the gray one. Okay. Yeah, so see how that works, man. What you want to do. Now here's the exercise, okay? Here's how you teach this. Here's what you do. Is in the group, you set up a little group exercise here whereby one person will give a specific feature or fact about their product. Okay? Then the next person has to give the advantage and the bridge. Then the next person has to give the benefit and tie it down. Okay? So like Jeff might say, feature of the 21st century marketing system is that we leverage hidden marketing assets. What's the advantage?
The advantage of that is that we use existing marketing that's going on in your business so that there's no additional cost to you.
Okay. What that means to you is, and what's the benefit? He already kind of gave the benefit.
Additional money from your business to make this thing work.
Tie it down.
Well, that's what you want, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Good. Okay. See, and this applies to anything that you're selling. And once you get, and see, you got to practice this. And you need to practice it as far as selling your consulting services as well. Because, you know, this needs to become just a real natural flow, just a natural thing that you do. And what you have to think about is any time you mention a specific fact or feature about whatever it is that you're selling, you need to have this trigger in your brain that instantly says, what's in it for him? What's in it for him? What's in it for him? Okay? And you have to translate that back to a specific advantage, bridge, benefit, tie down. Okay? Do you all get that? Okay? If you went out, guys, I guarantee you, if you went out to all the retailers in your market, and you sit down and you train their salespeople just on not saying, may I help you, and presenting the product in terms of feature, advantage, bridge, benefit, tie down, they'd think you were God. They'd think you were a genius. Okay? They would love you forever because it really would help them out. Oh, it is. Powerful. Powerful, powerful tools. quick story here, okay? This is a joke. Young girl from Dallas, Texas, goes to work for Air France. And in the reservation office, see? And people call up and she'd say, Air France, may I help you? Supervisor comes over and says, no, listen. Listen, you got to say Air France, Air France. So she practiced, okay. Call comes in, Air France, may I help you? Okay. All right. Now, in giving the features, the advantages, and the benefits, you want to give evidence to back it up, okay? To prove that what you're saying is true. Now if I say that, hey, you buy the Dodge Caravan because it has the highest safety record there is, you might challenge me and say, well, I don't believe that. I want to see that. How can you prove that? Okay? Well, there's seven forms of evidence. And we call this the defeat method because this seven forms of evidence will defeat most objections, okay? Well, the seven forms of evidence are, number one, D stands for demonstrate. Demonstrate, okay? Now, I remember one time going into a Saturn dealership, and they were saying their Saturns are really safe and all that, and they had a little demonstration there where they had, I guess this is kind of an exhibit as well, and that's by the way, is E, is exhibit. But they had a little cutaway, and they had the car kind of sliced, the side of the car sliced in half, so you could you could see, you know, all the frame and safety features and all that that were inside the frame of the car. And so they were demonstrating that their vehicle was safe by having a little exhibit set up. I was in Bemidji, Minnesota, working with an appliance guy. Sold Maytag washers. Maytag washers are supposed to last for a long time. I mean, their main feature is quality. Okay, they're going to last forever and ever. Well, he had a little demonstration set up. He had a Maytag washer hooked up in the window of his store, and it was set up so that it would just run continually, nonstop, load after load after load, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Okay? Never stopped running. So it was really an exciting thing because he had this set up right in the window of his store. This is kind of a small town, probably about the size of Milford. And had this set up in the window, and then people would come in and they would guess the exact day and time when the washer was going to break down. See? And whoever came closest to guessing the correct time would win a new Maytag washer and dryer. See? So anyway, he had this exhibit set up there, and it was something like, I don't know, a year and a half. Okay? Non-stop, like I say, load after load, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Which, worked out, I forget the exact numbers, but something like if it was actually being used under, you know, normal usage, you don't run it 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. It was like 56 years or something like that before it would, you know, break down. And so it really did a good job in demonstrating, you know, how effectively and how quality these things were and how long they were going to last. Okay, so demonstrate or exhibit. F stands for facts, okay? And you can give the facts that, I don't know what the facts are about the Caravan being the most safe vehicle, but maybe it's got the best frame or whatever, I don't know. Yeah, okay, all this stuff, all those facts, see?
No, I have
to. The seat falls out? Oh dear, that would suck. E stands for example. Give examples of how other people have used it. Yes, you know, Jeff, we had a family just the other day that got in a head-on collision in Logan Canyon with this Dodge Caravan. Not a scratch. Now, see, that's why you want to get this, okay? Examples of others. A stands for an analogy. An analogy. Oh, gosh. I always think of these analogies until I really need to use them in the workshop, and now I can't think of them. But you know what I mean by an analogy? It's kind of like a story that tells something else.
Illustrates
a principle. Yeah. Yeah. I can't think of one right now.
All through this whole seminar here, you pull out client examples that show exactly what.
Yeah, well, that's because we've done them a lot. You know, we've had a lot of clients. Yeah.
Those are,
yeah, okay, yeah, all right, good, all right. T stands for testimonial. Now, a testimonial is a very effective type of evidence, especially in a situation where credibility is at question. Okay, if credibility is an issue, people don't necessarily believe what you're telling them. Okay, having a third party testimonial can be very effective. Okay, you know, it's just like when you were deciding whether or not to come to this course. I mean, I could sit there and tell you all day long about how great we were and everything else, but you know, you called other people and they hopefully told you that it was okay. Huh? That's right. Okay. So you got testimonials because our credibility was an issue. I mean, here we are, Utah, you're in Saskatchewan, who knows, you know. So testimonials are very, very important. S stands for statistics. 4 out of 5 dentists recommend Crest toothpaste. Okay. Statistics. Okay? So those are the evidence that you can use to back up the facts that you claim when you're going through the feature, advantage, bridge, benefit, tie downs. Okay? And of course, there the tie downs you use, that's what you want, isn't it? Isn't it true that? Don't you agree that? And so on. Okay? Now, always reaffirm the dominant buying motive. When you're presenting the product, okay, your dominant buying motive in buying the caravan was safety, and you wanted to have more space. And so I'd constantly be reaffirming that. If that was the dominant buying motive, those are the things I want to focus on. I wouldn't be focusing on, oh man, this van, this is the fastest van there is. Yeah. Oh man, this thing gets, you know, 65 miles an hour in 4.2 seconds. You know, I mean, you don't care about that. You care about this, you know, the other things, all right?
You know, I have a lot of time doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. See, it's because they don't listen.
You put the chrome on this, all this stuff.
So,
what?
Yeah. Well, see, that's why it's so important to take the steps in order, because. Okay. Well, see, that's why it's so important to take the steps in order and find out what it is that you want, and then I gear my presentation towards that dominant buying motive. If I don't know what you want, you know, I might think, well, the last guy that I sold this van to, he bought because he loved this chrome. So maybe that's what you want too, so I sell you that. But don't assume that. Don't assume that just because that's why this guy bought, that's why you're going to buy. Not true. You got to find out what that dominant buying motive really is. Okay? And it's going to be, it can be different with everybody. But that's why you take them through the steps in order. Number five is paint word pictures of them enjoying their purchase. Okay? My wife used to sell Toyotas. She worked for Larry H. Miller Toyota. And she was, you know, quite effective at selling Toyotas, especially to, you know, young guys that would come in. You know, she was, well, when she was selling cars, she was about, I don't know, what, 25 years old, I guess. And, you know, she's a pretty attractive woman. And you know, these young guys would come in, and, boy, she'd put them in the Supra or some really upscale car. And then, oh, man, can you imagine? Can you imagine what it would be like as you drive down the street in this car, and here she is, blonde, really attractive, you know, and she's saying, man, you look so hot. You look so hot in this car.
Where do I sign?
Can you imagine, as you drive this thing down the street, man, I know, those girls, they're all going to want to go with you, you know? And imagine you're driving down, the sun's beating down through the sunroof here, and then you're feeling good, and all the girls are whistling at you, and that's why you want to buy this car, isn't it? Oh, yeah. You know, it works. It works because, you know, you paint the word pictures of them enjoying the product. Same thing in selling consulting services. Imagine how it would be. You have the marketing system in place, consistently generating leads for you. Your closing ratio is maximized because we have a good USP, and salespeople are all trained and they're all doing it. And you know, your customer worth is maximized, and your business is growing exponentially. And you know, the money's coming in, and you're just happy, and you're able to enjoy life and work on your business, not in your business. That's what you want to do, isn't it? Oh yeah. See, now the more you can incorporate the five senses into that word picture, the more it's going to be, the more effective it's going to be. Okay, like she would say, you know, to the young guy, imagine driving down the street, you know, your stereo with the quad speakers is blasting, and the sun's beating down on your roof, the wind's blowing through your hair, and man, this car just smells so good, the brand new fragrance, and you see the girls over there in the bikinis, and man, they're all just wanting to go with you, you know. See, she's getting all the senses in there. Okay, sounds goofy, but it works. Okay, motivating them to take action, closing the sale. Now, I'll tell you, my opinion is that, you know, a lot of sales trainers pay a lot of lip service to closing. And, you know, there's some big magical, mystical secret of closing the sale. And that you need to have some kind of all these little tricks and techniques and little tools and all these things that you do. I don't believe that, okay? I believe that the sale will close almost automatically if everything else. See? Just like selling you the fried oysters. Man, you're hungry. You love fried oysters. Here they are. There's no reason why you wouldn't buy them. Yeah, there you go. Okay, so see, if you've done the job right, there's really not going to be, any real reason why they're not going to buy. But you do have to close. You have to ask for the sale. Okay? Just like we said, you have to ask for the check. Same thing. You have to ask for the sale. Now, here are some different ways in which you can ask for the sale. Number one, simply ask a closing question. Should we go ahead and get started? Is there any real reason you wouldn't want to go ahead and buy it right now? Should we go ahead and write it up? Okay? Just ask a closing question, the answer to which will be either, yes or no. Okay, yes, I will buy, or no, I won't, and then they'll typically give you an objection, which we'll talk about here in a minute.
My favorite question is, should we write it up now? That just makes my hair stand right on
the head. Did she say that?
No.
She just told me I wasn't getting under there without my hand.
Lock the door, take your car keys, throw them on the roof, Okay, number two is the assumptive close. And that's the close, remember in the little role play that we did the other day with the bicycle store? That's the close that I used with him. I just assumed he was going to buy. Now, Richard, we can do the focus group with you and your staff on either Wednesday or Thursday. Okay? And then I used the alternative choice, which would work better for you. Okay? So I just assumed that he was going to buy, then gave him an alternative choice as to what times we should do it. Okay? The assumptive close is simply just assuming that they're going to buy, and you just go ahead and start working it up. Just go ahead and start putting it together. If they don't stop you, they bought. See? Yeah. And that's probably the best way to go about closing on consulting services. You show them all the projects, show them everything we're going to do, and then just assume right on through. Yeah. That's right. That's right. That's right.
I had a guy write a song in 310 that way. $250,000 or $300,000. He just assumed that I was going to buy it.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't work every time. Okay, the alternate choice close is where you give them two alternative choices. Well, should we do the client meeting or should we do the staff meeting on Wednesday or would Thursday be better? Do you want the red one or the blue one? Should we deliver it on Friday or would Saturday be better? Do you want to use cash or MasterCard? Okay? You give them an alternative choice, the answer to which, either way, they have bought. Okay? Number four is the minor point close. Now, what the minor point close is maybe there's some minor objection or some minor question or problem that if you can work it out, they're going to go ahead and buy it. So if I could get you that new Dodge Caravan in blue with the the gold trim, can we go ahead and work it out? Okay. So
work it out and start to write it up.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's one we typically use too in consulting services is to go ahead and work it out. Yeah.
Write it up and buy the contract.
And that's right. Yeah. So in our business, there's nothing to write up, so you don't say that. So should we go ahead and work it out? Okay. The instruction close is essentially just where you instruct them to do something. And by so doing, they have bought. Here, take this over to the cashier, and she'll ring it up for you.
Okay.
They take it over. Or in our business, the instruction close could be, go get a list of your customers, write me out a check for $1,500, and we'll see you next week. Okay? Once you ask for the sale, shut up. Shut up. Don't say another word. Should we go ahead and work it out? You see, once you've asked for the sale, you've now put the ball in their court. They have to do something with it. And Well, yeah, you know, and see, the thing is that it's easier to say yes than it is to say no. And that silence oftentimes creates a little intensity, a little positive pressure, and use it to your advantage, okay? The only time that you should speak after you have asked for the sale, after you've asked them to buy, the only time that you should ever speak is if they do one of three things. And those three things are, number one, they say yes. Well, then I hope we know what to do at that point, okay? Number two, they say no and give you an objection. Typically, most people just don't say just no. They will give you some kind of an objection. Or three, they ask you a question. Ask you a question. That's the only time you should speak, is if they do one of those three things. Okay? So, what do we do? If they say yes, well, good. Go ahead, work it out, do whatever you have to. Don't let anything get in the way. All right? If they ask you a question, then you have to answer. If they ask, if they give you an objection, then you're going to have to deal with it. Now, objections come in a number of different types. You need to be able to recognize those types. First type of objection is a put-off or a stall. Actually, I'm going to reverse this for you. There are only two real objections. Everything else is what we call a smokescreen. Okay? Let me give you the two real objections first. The first real objection is, I don't need it. I don't need it. Now, that is a legitimate objection. And what it means is that you have, as a salesperson, failed back in step number two in isolating the need, finding the dominant buying motive. Okay? You come into the car dealership, and I start selling you the Pontiac Firebird. Okay, you may want it, but you don't need it. You're not going to buy it, okay? Because it does not meet your needs of safety and family and all that stuff. Okay, so that is a legitimate objection. Okay, there are only two legitimate objections, by the way. Okay, assuming we're dealing with a qualified prospect. The second legitimate objection is, it won't work. It won't work. And that stems back again to the fact that you've not really isolated exactly what they need and you have not filled their need. Sure, you need new transportation because you wrecked your old vehicle, but the Pontiac Firebird is not going to work for me. Okay? Or, yeah, I want to grow my business, but I really don't believe that the plan that you've put together here is going to work. It's not going to do anything for me. Okay? Which means that you failed then back in step number three, putting together a plan or a product that will fulfill his needs. Okay? Now, these are the only two legitimate objections. Everything else is a smokescreen. Okay? Now, if you get these legitimate objections, and oftentimes the smokescreen simply masks one of the legitimate objections, but if you get one of these legitimate objections, it means that you need to go back to that point in the selling process, okay? If the legitimate objection is, I don't need it, means you haven't isolated their need. You've got to go back to the probing stage, the who, what, when, where, how, and why. If the objection is it won't work, then it means that you've got to go back and recreate another, another idea, another plan, another product, or find something else that will meet those needs. Okay, now, there's another kind of objection which is a little bit unique and it is a little bit legitimate, okay? And it's called a condition. okay, a condition. And what that means is that, yeah, they want to buy. They're sold. They'd like to buy it. They're going to buy it. But there's something getting in the way. Okay? Yeah, I'm going to buy the new Dodge Caravan. That's the one I want. Price is great. That's exactly what I want. And as soon as I get my insurance settlement on my other vehicle, I'll come down and buy it. So there's no way I can buy it today. See, the condition here is I got to get the insurance money. All right? Now, that's a legitimate thing. It's not really an objection. It's not really an objection, but it's a condition that is hampering the close of the sale. Typically, there's not much you can do about the conditions. Okay? You have to simply work with them. Another condition that we see happening quite a lot, especially in the sale of consulting services, okay, is that people like to feel as though they have bought rather than that they have been sold. And so a lot of times what you'll see happening is a guy, he wants to do it, he's going to do it, he's all set, but he's just not going to commit to it today. And the reason why is because he does not want to appear to have been sold. What he wants to do is he wants to appear as though he buys. Now, I have seen this happen time after, happens to almost every day, time after time after time after time. And I'll just tell you this because it's very appropriate to consulting services. It's called the 24-hour rule. And I'm not sure if this happens in the sale of other products, but it definitely happens in the sale of consulting services, okay? 24-hour rule. And what the 24-hour rule is this. I say, well, gee, you know, Pete, I really like what you've shown me here, and I really think we want to do it. I just tell you, let me call you tomorrow. Now, the 24-hour rule is they say just that, okay, that they give you a time when they are going to call you back sometime within the next 24 hours. What that means is that they have bought, but they just want to appear as though they buy, not that they've been sold, okay? And in 95% of the cases where that happens, they will call you back within 24 hours, and they will buy. I can't even remember the last time that has failed.
Really, I would have read that differently.
Now, it would be different if they said this. Well, Ben, you know, looks good. I think we want to do it. I'll tell you what, I'll call you next week. It's dead. It'll never happen. Never, never happen. It's the time frame. Okay? That's what will clue you in, is the time frame. If they give you a time when they're going to let you know, and it's within 24 hours, they've bought. If it's anything more than 24 hours, deal's dead. Guarantee you, it is dead. It will never happen. There's an objection there that you've got to deal with. Okay? Yeah, we'll talk about how to find it out here in just a second. Okay? But that's an important thing for you to learn, because the 24-hour rule comes up a lot. And what you want to be on the lookout for is if you get the 24-hour rule, you don't want to start hammering them, because all it's going to do is make them mad. It's going to irritate them, and they might get, you know, pissed off and not buy. See? Because they've already bought. They just want to look like they've bought, not that they've been sold. So whenever I get the 24-hour rule, I say, great, fine, talk to you tomorrow.
Now, do you let them phone you back, or do you say, geez, I'm going to have to get a hold of them? Would it be all right if I phone you?
Well, yeah, you can do that. Yeah, absolutely. You can pin down a time. It was kind of interesting on this travel agent that I closed. And this has been the highest fee per project I've ever done. And, you know, I presented it to him, and he said, you know, I think we're 80% there. He said, I think I'll do it. He says, I'll call you tomorrow. Okay, that's fine. That was about 10 o'clock in the morning. 1 o'clock that afternoon, he sent a messenger to our office with a check and said, we're ready to do it. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Incredible. Okay? So keep that in mind. That's a condition. And remember that 24-hour rule. Okay? All right. Now, other objections that you get here are the stall or the put off? Well, I'll let you know. I can't do it this week, but let's get together next week. Okay. Can't do it now, but you know, first of the month. Okay. They don't want to tell you no. They just want to string you along, and the reason why they do that is because people don't like to say no. It's hard for them to say no. They'd rather put you off and hope that you forget about it, okay? And rather than tell you no, and they'll keep stringing you along forever like that, okay? And it's not a real objection; it's a smokescreen, okay? And these are all smokescreen objections. Okay. The other type of objection is, and there could be any number of these. Okay, and they are excuses. Well, my wife is sick right now. Okay, and or whatever it might be. Okay, there's any number of excuses, and the last kind of objection is what I call the half baked. Okay, it just really has no bearing on what it is that you're doing, and those are all what the most common stall or put off that you get is, I have to think about it. Okay? Think about it. Okay? All of these kinds of objections here are really, in most cases, unless the guy is just a, you know, moron or something here, they're masking the real reason. They're typically using one of these stalls, excuses, or half-baked objections to mask the real reason. Okay? The real reason I don't need it or it won't work. And so what you have to try to do is you have to try to smoke it out, overcome the objection. Now, I want to tell you something here as far as when you should handle objections. Typically, you're going to get objections throughout the selling process. Ostensibly, you're going to get them at any point in the process. What you want to try to do, if you get objections at any point in the selling process prior to having asked them to buy, is you want to just steer around it. The reason why is because many times the objections will automatically work themselves out as you take them through the process, building rapport, finding the need, filling the need, and closing.
Right. So, for example, one of their objections is they don't think that it would be effective, or that you have the expertise to make it effective, then as you step through, you're building that credibility, overcoming that objection without even doing it directly.
That's right, without even doing it directly. So here's what you do, okay? And I'm going to give you a four-step process here for overcoming objections and dealing with it. The first step is to smile. In other words, maintain your rapport, maintain your poise. Don't let it throw you, okay? Second thing is call them by name. The third thing is to agree with them, okay? Agree with the way that they feel. So you get the objection early on is, you know, he's worried about your credibility, not sure you can pull it off or whatever. So you say, well, you know, Jeff, I can certainly appreciate that because I know this is going to be a big project, and you know, you want to make sure that I can do the job for you, and I can certainly appreciate the way you feel about that. As we go through this, I'm sure you'll be able to see why that's not going to be a worry for you. Okay. So rather than trying to answer and say, well, what do you mean you don't think I can do it? Did you know I did this, 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 and this, and I'm great, da da da. Rather than hitting the thing head on, in creating a confrontational environment, you want to steer around it and maintain a partnering relationship. So if I agree with the way he feels about the objection, then I'm on the same side. Okay? We're together on this thing. Okay? So here's the thing. So at any point in the selling process prior to having asked them to buy, you just go to this point here. Smile, call them by name, agree with the way they feel, and then just simply go on. Just bypass it. Okay? He said, well, I think your services cost too much. Well, Jeff, I can certainly appreciate that because I know it is a big investment to do the job right. Now let's take a look at this over here, okay? And you steer around it. Now the reason you do that, again, is because most of the objections, if you're following the process, most of the objections are going to be eliminated automatically, simply by building rapport, finding the need, filling the need, and closing, okay? Now, if you get the objection, you know, after you've closed, after you've asked them to buy, and you get, you know, a smoke screen, oh, I have to think about it, then you want to use the ready method, okay? And what you're trying to do here is you're trying to, you know, you want to isolate the objection and be able to overcome it, okay? Now, R stands for reverse it, okay? And simply spell it back to him. So, Jeff, I can appreciate the way you feel. It's a big decision. I know you have to think about it. What is it you're going to think about? Okay? Or, and that's not really reversing. Reversing is, so you have to think about it for a while? Okay. And oftentimes, by reversing it back to them and putting it back on their lap, they're going to tell you what is really getting in the way. Okay? Because, see, we can't deal with the I have to think about it smokescreen objection. We can only deal with the real, legitimate objection. Okay? We have to find out what is really getting in the way. Either he doesn't need it or he doesn't think it'll work. We have to find out. Okay? E stands for explain it. Well, I don't think I'll buy the caravan because I don't think it's as safe as you say. Well, Jeff, I can appreciate the way you feel because I know you want a really safe vehicle. Let me explain to you why it's so safe. Okay, and explain it to him again. A stands for admit it. Well, I don't think I'm going to buy the Dodge Caravan because, you know, I heard that sometimes when you get in a rear-end collision, the seats pop out. Well, Jeff, I can appreciate the way you feel, you know, because that was a problem. That did happen in the past. I just admitted it. Yeah, it's true. It did happen. But let's see what they've done to, you know, let me see what they've done to fix that. Okay? So you just admit it. Yes, it is true. D stands for deny it. Well, I don't think I'm going to buy the Dodge Caravan because I heard that it was the most unsafe van on the road. Well, Jeff, I can appreciate the way you feel because I know that you know, you want a safe vehicle, but that's just not true. In fact, it's one of the safest vehicles, and here, let me show you why. And then you go back to your evidence, okay? Back to your seven forms of evidence. Y stands for ask why, okay? Why do you need to think about it? What is it that you need to think about, okay? So what you have to do then in dealing with and overcoming these objections is to find out what's really getting in the way and try to reduce it back down to one of the legitimate reasons, okay? Legitimate reason being either I don't need it or I don't think it's going to work, which will then give you the tools that you need in which to overcome it. Just go back to that point in the selling process. Okay? Any questions about that? All right. Learning to upsell. Oh. If I can, would you? In other words, if I can prove to you that the Dodge Caravan is the safest van on the road, would you go ahead and buy it? If I can prove to you that the back seat's not going to fly out when you get hit from the rear end, would you go ahead and buy it? If I can demonstrate to you that by implementing the 21st century marketing system, you could achieve exponential growth, can we go ahead and work it out? See? Okay. Learning to upsell. The key to upselling is packaging. Packaging. Putting package together products, services, selling it as a group, getting them to buy more. Just like we have seen McDonald's and fast food restaurants have packaged their sandwiches and drinks and fries to create the value meal. Okay? Now, the key to packaging, there's several things you should do here. Number one, create complementary products. Put complementary products and services together. Okay? In other words, the guy comes into the clothing store and, you know, buys the new sports jacket, Well, show him the shirts, the ties, the slacks, the shoes, the socks, and everything else that would go along with that. Okay? Number two, always assume that they are going to buy the package, buy more. Okay, I went into a store here in Salt Lake and wanted to buy some of those little rubber things for my shoes, you know, it's about a $4.50 purchase.
Rubber?
Yeah, yeah. Went in to buy those things, walked out $675 later.
Oh,
you know, I'm going to buy the little toe rubbers, and the guy says, "Boy, we got some nice sports jackets in. You know, let me just try this on you." You know, he puts it. I got to buy this, the jacket and a couple of pairs of pants and shirts and new tie and I mean the whole deal. Okay, No, he's not. Actually, the company is a little bit there. They don't fit our target group. Okay, so just assume the customer is going to buy. Until they say no, just keep building it up, okay? Number three, use this concept. Let me show you what a lot of other people use this with, or wear this with, or buy with this, okay? Show what other people have done. Package it the way other people have bought it. So that, you know, that this is what everybody else is doing.
So what was that one again?
Let me show you what a lot of other people have bought to go with this. So you go to buy the new Dodge Caravan. He says, "Man, let me show what everybody's doing to these things. Man, they're putting in this option, that option, and all. It makes it so great." And you know,
he's right player in that thing.
I still got a bunch of 8-track tapes in the basement. Okay, number four, just ask the question, should we add the fill in the blank? Should we add the shirt? Should we add the tie? Should we add the new shoes? Okay? Number five, use this phrase, go ahead and try this on with your new jacket, okay? And that's how this guy sold me. He says, "Here, go ahead and try this new jacket on." Oh, well, okay. Try it on. You like it.
And it looks so stiffy, you couldn't withstand the pressure.
Oh, that's right. And you've got to have new pants to go with it. And,
sure.
You know.
Just pay the credit.
Sure. And ties. Oh, yeah, just pull it out. Pull out the plastic. Go ahead and just try it on. Okay. Now, next page. When and where to upsell. Okay. When you upsell, you can upsell after the initial purchase decision. So I go in, I make the decision, I'm going to buy the new toe rubbers, and he starts upselling me all the other stuff. Okay? You know, that the car dealers are very good at this. I mean, you go, you buy the new car, and then they take you back in that little finance room, and they start selling you the
three protection, the paint protection, the extended
warranties, all that stuff. Boy, that's all pure profit. Okay, upsell, you know, when you're sure that they are owners. Upsell afterwards, okay? Anyway, you can upsell all the time, okay? When and where, you can upsell working the floor, putting things in their hand, building their pile, okay? That's what the guy at the clothing store, just kept building my pile, just put more stuff in there, okay? At the register, okay? Well, you guys heard of Bunsmaster Bakeries? Yeah, they were a client of mine nationally in Canada a couple years ago. I did a lot of training with all their dealer groups all across Canada. And one of the things that they were doing, you've probably seen the promotion they do or used to do about every year. They'd get this bag, and they'd send it out with the newspaper and print it on the bag. Let's say, bring this bag into Bunsmaster, and all the buns you can stuff into the bag you get for 99 cents. You remember that promotion? Very, very effective promotion on bringing traffic into the bakery, okay? But what was happening is that people would come in with the bag, and, you know, the bag was designed to hold about maybe half a dozen buns at the most. People would come in, and, I mean, they'd mash them in. You know, they put 15, 20 buns in the bag. They didn't care if they were all mashed down, right? So even though it was bringing a lot of people in, people would come in, they'd mash, you know, 15 buns into the bag, they'd pay 99 cents, walk out, Bunsmaster was losing money. See? And they were thinking about discontinuing the promotion. Well, I looked at that and I said, What is the hidden marketing asset here? You tell me. What is the hidden asset there?
Upsell.
Well, what's the asset that they have?
Well, they got clients.
They got people in the store. Okay? Brings in hundreds of people.